Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sangai Nation, QT and Sangai here with you on another Friday afternoon. To start the show off, we unfortunately lost China this week. She passed away at the age of 45, so we're going to start with the tin bell. Some show notes if you are looking for some wrestling in the next couple of days. Tonight, WCWO happening at the Outlaw Arena. EPW in Mount Storm, West Virginia. RCW in Red Deer, Alberta. NWA Supreme in Hanover, Indiana. NSCW in Franklin, Kentucky. AIWF in Boonville, Mississippi. And VCW in Toronto, Ontario. Tomorrow night, NWWA in Portland, Oregon, WWA in Owensboro, Kentucky, EWF in Mentone, California, RCPW in Newark, Delaware, OCWA in Whiteburg, Georgia, UEW in Los Angeles, California, Smash Mouth Pro Wrestling in Valparaiso, Indiana, ECWA in Newcastle, Delaware, MIW in New Hope, Minnesota, HRW in Warsaw, Missouri, OTW in Williamstown, New Jersey, AIWF in Mount Airy, North Carolina, OWO in Parma, Ohio, RAPW in Struthers, Ohio, and the NWA tomorrow night in Amarillo, Texas. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest. It has been quite a while since he's been with us, but he is back on the show today. Chris Caliber, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, buddy. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure as always. Now, in the last year or so, you have really stepped up your wrestling schedule from what you had been doing. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the decision to increase the wrestling bookings in the last year?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much I was done with wrestling. I kind of walked away, but I got a little boy at home, you know, and he kind of seen some of Dad's stuff, and he was like, Dad, why don't you wrestle anymore? I want to see you wrestle. So, you know, I can't disappoint my kids, so I had to start stepping it back up.
Now, in the last 2 years, you've appeared at Emerge, you've appeared at NWA Supreme, I believe, also making your way to New Era Wrestling in Shelbyville. Lots of new places for you, lots of new opponents. Did it feel almost like starting over, having so many opponents that weren't necessarily around when you were more or less full-time active?
Oh, yeah. It's completely feeling like starting over, you know, meeting all these young kids coming in. You know, it kind of makes me feel like an old man to say that, but, you know, most of the rosters are people that I've never wrestled before, and I've been doing this since 99, you know, so it feels like, yeah, I'm starting from square one again.
Came full circle, didn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you, of course, valeted by Karma, and she appears with you in pretty much all the promotions where you wrestle. You've also tagged with her in mixed tag team matches. What has it been like having Karma with you as you've upped your wrestling schedule pretty much in addition to her own schedule being upped?
Oh, yeah. I mean, anytime you can have your wife with you and her being a standout talent on her own, you know, it just makes everything that much better. It's kind of a family thing now. And that's kind of what we look at when we're traveling somewhere or working for a company is, you know, does it benefit our family to do so? And if it does, then, you know, that's awesome. And if it doesn't, then, you know, we find somewhere else that, you know, our family will be taken care of.
Since Karma was really active on a more wide scale basis, women's wrestling has really stepped up. There's a lot of phenomenal talent out there. And Karma, of course, is part of the first ever women's match at Emerge against Nikki Mariani. What do you think about the women's wrestling scene right now?
I think in the last, I don't know, 6 months, maybe a year, the girls have kind of got tired of taking a backseat to the guys almost. It's like they're having the same mentality that I had when I first started in wrestling at the, you know, the whole we're going to steal this show, this is going to be ours mentality. And I think that's what's happening with women wrestling right now. And I think it's awesome because it not only pushes the women's wrestlers to be better against each other, it pushes the guys to not be outdone by the girls now.
Now, like I said, you have been in tag team matches with Karma as an intergender tag team on occasion. What's it been like to be a tag team with your own wife in there?
It's awesome. I mean, it's a little scary at times. Obviously, that's my wife. I don't want anything to happen to her. But, you know, it's awesome to see her get in there and really shine in front of big crowds, you know, like we're drawing at Emerge and stuff like that. It's a pretty cool experience to sit back and watch.
We mentioned Emerge is one of the promotions you're pretty prominent, and you go back with the people that are in charge with Emerge quite some time to the early days of your career. What was it like getting the call for you to come into Emerge and having it populated by guys that you broke into the business with, basically?
It just shows that maybe our little group of young punks back in the day kind of knew what we were doing. It took a while to get to the point of having all the knowledge that we have, but, you know, they called me and they're like, hey, we're going to do this thing. You know, we want to draw big. We don't want it to be a small thing. And I'm like, all right, cool. We'll give it a shot. My kid's been wanting to see me wrestle live for a while. You know, he hadn't got to see me. So I was like, you know what? I'm cool with all these guys. We've always got along, so why not give it a shot? And boy, were we surprised at all the results that they got. I mean, those guys are doing a fantastic job of promoting this stuff.
There's a lot of faces on the Emerge roster that you would not have come across before you entered Emerge. A lot of really young talent that's coming up, Cole Roderick among them. You got Apollo Starr, who wasn't really crossing paths with you too much, people like that. What's it been like familiarizing yourself with the current Emerge roster, since there's kind of a mix of guys that you had known fairly well and a mix of guys that you hadn't come across before?
It's been fun getting to know everybody and kind of seeing their styles and seeing what they do. I mean, these young guys coming in, they're leaps and bounds at where I was when I came into the business 6 months or a year, you know, like they're coming in with a completely different mindset than I did. And, you know, I came in just because, you know, I loved wrestling. That's what I did. You know, I watched wrestling every day. I wanted to be a wrestler. And then these kids are coming in, they're like, I want to be a success at wrestling. And, you know, just being in there isn't enough. I want to be the top guy. And, you know, the guys like Cole and Sage and Kyle Maverick and Anthony Totale and Apollo and all those guys, man, they're just out there killing it, trying to be the best ever. And I think that's amazing.
Some of the young talent you've seen is extremely good. A lot of those kids are actually even second and third generation. A lot different from when you broke in, when second and third generation was still fairly uncommon for the independents. You didn't see them independently too much. Who are some of the younger guys out there that you think are going to be the future stars of the business in the next 5 years or so?
I think a few guys that could be top guys on a big level in probably the next 5, maybe 6 years. I think Jeremy Hadley has what it takes. I mean, I know he's not really a younger guy, but, I mean, he's still young enough. He's got time to do something. He's great at what he does, even though I can't stand him and I want to kick him in the face. He is one of the best at what he does. I think Cole Radrick, Sage Phillips, both, you know, if they keep doing what they're doing and stay in the course, they're going to be big stars somewhere. Kyle Maverick is already a stud in the ring, and he's got a look to him that's pretty damn good. So I think, you know, somebody's going to catch him, and they're going to take him somewhere great. Anthony Zotale and Kenzie, I mean, Anthony Zotale's got a heck of a look to him, and he's got the talent to follow it up as well. I mean, these kids, all of them coming in, I can't really, like, single out these. You know, you got Remy Wilkins out there. You got Trevor Court, Ace Perry, Joe Pittman, all these kids, man. They're all great talents. I mean, any one of them could be a star somewhere really easily.
One of the things that was more popular in your day, but there are still some promotions that utilize it, is hardcore wrestling. And some of the promotions out there, a lot of the younger guys see that as a way to being a superstar, because they saw a lot of the guys that had been in Combat Zone Wrestling and IWA Mid-South 10 to 15 years ago doing the hardcore matches eventually make it to the main stages. What's your opinion today as far as it relates to the hardcore wrestling aspect, and does it really help these young kids to try to do that?
Hardcore wrestling isn't really my thing anymore. I mean, of course, it was really big back in the day when we were watching wrestling with, you know, ECW and all that, you know, really pushing the envelope. And I think it can be beneficial to these kids because there's a place for it, you know, out there. It's just like, you know, lucha wrestling and ground and pound style and the strong style and high flying and all that. There's a place for it. My only advice to these kids doing it, if you're going to do it, make sure you get paid and make sure you're being seen by a lot of people to do it. Don't do it for 10 people, you know, in a parking lot somewhere and not get paid, because you shouldn't really wrestle in a ring in front of 10 people and not get paid, you know, just normal. So adding chairs and light bulbs and, you know, all that other stuff too, you know, you should do that for its maximum impact. I think the whole card of hardcore wrestling gets really monotonous and, you know, you have to go farther and farther. And I'm not knocking on any of these guys that do it. It's just, I think maybe scale it back a little bit, you know, and sprinkle it in here or there, you know, make it a special attraction for people to see. So when they see it, you know, advertised on a flyer, it draws a huge crowd because they're like, oh, we haven't seen this for a while. Now we want to see it, you know. But I think these young kids, you know, it's like pick and choose your spots on when you're going to do that. And that way you're not, one, destroying your body for nothing, and two, it makes an impact with the fans that watch it.
Now, some of the things that you used to do when you were breaking into this were just insane. But do you see these young kids with maybe a incorrect view of what hardcore is? Do you think that they just see guys like CM Punk and Dean Ambrose and whoever having gone through the hardcore independence and make it to TV? Do you think that they presume that's what the large companies are looking at?
Now, I think the kids come in nowadays are, for the most part, I'm sure there's exceptions to every rule, but for the most part, I think they're smart enough to know, you know, this is what Vince is looking for. This is, you know, what Dixie's looking for with TNA. That's not really how it was. Because, like, back in our day, it was, well, we got to do anything to be seen. And nowadays, you got all these big companies, Ring of Honor, you got all the companies in Japan, and you know what they're looking for. And they're looking for the hard work, and they're looking for the talent, you know. So I think kids today are smart enough to know that that isn't the main way to make it, but it's the exception to the rule to make it. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Well, at this point, my co-host QT is standing by, and I know QT has some questions for you also, so I'm going to give things to him for a bit.
All right.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Chris.
Hello, QT. How you doing?
Not too bad. Good to have you back.
Thank you.
Chris, we started out the show with a 10-bell salute for China. Can we ask you what your impression was when you saw China for the first time, and was it when she made her appearance in the ring with Goldust and Marlena?
The first time I saw her, man, that's going back a little ways. I mean, she was impressive when you first saw her. You know, I was quite a bit younger, so that the thing that I vividly remember most about one of the first few times, I should say, of seeing her was when she grabbed Marlena on the side of the ring when she was sitting in the director's chair and was just shaking her like a rag doll and all that. That was, like, so impressive to me when I first seen that.
And how did you like her interactions with Eddie Guerrero, the Latino heat?
I thought that was a really, really good story between them. I thought, you know, it was fun. It wasn't anything too serious. And sometimes in wrestling, we kind of need something like that. You know what I mean?
To your knowledge, have you ever seen any video of Eddie Guerrero driving down to the ring in his Cadillac with China in the passenger seat? I myself haven't.
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay.
Not that I can recall.
All right. How would you compare the impact of her death with the death of Roddy Piper? Would you say about the same as the death of the Lemmy of Motorhead and recently of Prince, who ironically died the same day as China?
I think comparing China and Roddy Piper, it would depend greatly on who you ask. Because I know the death of Roddy Piper was a bigger thing for me because I was a big Roddy Piper guy, you know what I mean? And I know there's females out there that the death of China is just, you know, affects them just as much as, you know, Roddy Piper did me. So I think that's like a subjective question. But Lemmy and Prince, I mean, those are both huge legends in the music world that are gone too soon.
Okay, all right, very well said. All right. Now, China, of course, kind of like a groundbreaker in modern wrestling for that era. Of course, you had pioneering women before her, but due to the cable network and stuff, she really made more of an impact in more households, and she became instantly available for all the young women that didn't have access earlier on, say like in the 70s and early 80s to YouTube.
Yeah, I think China's exposure to the younger girls, I think her thing set an example of these girls are just as tough as guys. You know, you can stand in there and hang with them. Yeah, I think that's what she's most going to be remembered for. You know, I mean, she wasn't the most, you know, gifted person in the ring. I mean, she was better than good, obviously, because she was in the WWE for a while and she did her thing. So she wasn't just average, but, you know, she set an example for these girls that you don't have to take a backseat to guys. You can be in there with them, and you can be in there doing your thing and be just as believable as the rest of these people.
Well, Chris, I just wish I had the chance, or if I could travel back in time to make it happen, to arrange a match between China and ODB. Yeah.
Oh, that could be fun. Yeah, China and Lufisto would be just as good. You know what I mean? There's all kinds of girls that would be phenomenal to see them go against it. But ODB in China, that'd be a pretty good one, I think.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that would be. Well, Chris, I saw your video entitled Chris Caliber E5 Post-Match Promo, and Jeremy Hadley had placed a bounty on Ace Perry, and there is a belt involved that is in your possession. Also mentioned in this video is some cash coming your way. Can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners how much money, perhaps a ballpark figure, you stand to collect or you have already collected?
Well, I have already collected on that. We're on coming up to Merge 14 now. So, you know, we bypassed E5 a while ago. But me and Jeremy Hadley don't see eye to eye anymore, but I will give him credit where credit is due. He did pay up when I delivered the Outbreak title. You know, I won't give out the exact number, but I'll say it's more than $10, less than $10,000. How's that?
Ooh, very nice. Very nice. Okay. At this sign guy, I can't seem to control my mute button on the phone. How am I sounding?
You sound fine on this end.
Oh, okay. All right. Just I had a sound check there, Chris. Okay. All right. Well, Chris, I also saw your YouTube video called Chris Caliber is Ready for Outbreak. And at the beginning of the video, you mentioned a young wrestler named Cole Radrick. I mentioned him earlier on. And that he wants a shot at the match higher up in the card. Higher up in the Emerge card. To your knowledge, has Cole Radrick ever wrestled for a semi-main event or main event since this video posted?
I think at the Outbreak, the show titled Outbreak with the tournament, he was in what I would consider to be the semi-main event. He was in the finals of the Outbreak tournament. So, I mean, he's working his way up there. I mean, I think if he gets away from Christopher Icon, he'll have a better shot at main eventing. He's got the talent. He's just being led down the wrong direction.
Oh, okay. All right. Wrong direction. Not so good. All right. Well, you said Cole would get his shot when you did the video if he put in his time and worked his butt off. Does this reinforce the national perception that these new young millennials have the reputation of wanting everything handed to them on a platter, that they can get their A's and B's on the report cards for little efforts, that everyone should get a participation trophy, and that there are losers in life among the peers, but they are few and far between, and they should be?
I don't know if I see it that way, or I see it more of a kid coming into a situation where, you know, he wants to kind of call his shot and be one of the top guys, you know. And I kind of respect that because he's coming in. He's, what, a year into the business, I think, maybe a year and a half. And he wants to run with the big dogs. He wants to try to hang with them. And, you know, what better way to prove how good you are than to go against the best that there is to offer?
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if it's been over a year since he's paid his dues, and okay, I think that's legit, yes. All right. Well, you also mentioned that at Emerge 13 that Anthony Totelli is going to be wrestling. Sign Guy has often mentioned on our broadcast that he can eat like a billy goat and never gain an ounce of weight. My question is, have you ever sat down at a Waffle House and ate a meal across from Anthony Totelli?
I have not, but looking at that guy, I think it's a true statement by Sign Guy, but I know he works his butt off in the gym. So I don't know if it's just, you know, genetics that allows him to eat as much as he wants and not gain any weight, or if it's the work he's putting in.
Okay. Do you think he could hold his own in a Coney Island hot dog eating contest against Kobayashi?
No, Kobayashi's really good. I don't know. it'd be interesting to see.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Chris, it's also known that although he has never been to Australia and thus never participated in a dance-off between neighboring Aboriginal tribes that Anthony is a student of the Australian instrument, the didgeridoo. My point is, I heard a Pacific Northwest wrestler say, if you can master the didgeridoo, you will have mastered the drop toe hold. Have you yourself been the victim of a drop toe hold by Anthony Totelli?
I have not. I have not had the pleasure of wrestling against him yet. But
oh,
I think there's some truth to your statement, because I have seen a drop toe hold end of match before. So there could be truth to that. Maybe that guy was a student of the game in Australia, and that's how his drop toe hold worked. I think you're on the
top. Wow, all right. All right, well, you said that these two participants were in a drop toe hold match. Can you mention their names and if they had studied the didgeridoo?
I'm not sure if they studied or not. Participants in the match, I believe, were Cliffhanger and a kid by the name of Plowboy Portman. And Plowboy Portman lost to the drop toe hold.
Oh, all right. All right. Well, I'll have to try to contact them and ask them if they play the didgeridoo. Okay, very good. All right. Well, Chris, I mentioned the dance-off between Aboriginal tribe, neighboring tribes. When two tribes come together, they often sport their favorite American rock band on the T-shirts they wear. Megadeth, Rocket from the Crypt, and Pantera are popular choices, as most Aboriginal tribes tend to stick with heavy metal American bands. In our interview with Anthony Totelli, he said that if he was ever in an Australian Outback dance-off, that he would wear a T-shirt representing the American punk band The Dickies. My question is, are you familiar with this punk rock group that burst onto the consciousness of American youth back in the late 70s when they appeared on the Don Rinkles sitcom CPO Sharky?
I am not familiar with that. That was a little before my time, but yeah, I'm into punk rock music, so I'm going to have to look them up.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'd like to say that CPO stands for Chief Petty Officer, or a rank of E7, and that's what Don Rinkles was portraying, a Chief Petty Officer. Well, I'd like to give you the Turnbuckle Turmoil homework assignment to listen to the song by the Dickies called Manny, Moe, and Jack. Will you do this for us?
I sure will.
Give us your opinion of the song. That'd be great.
I will sure do that for you.
And if you do like this song, Manny, Moe, and Jack, would you be open to the possibility of using it as a part-time entrance theme song or trying it out on a one-time basis?
I will have to give it a listen. And if it's good enough, yeah, maybe. Maybe we can do something.
Oh, man, this is great. Okay, very good. All right. Well, if you do like the Manny, Moe, and Jack song, would you consider wearing a Dickies T-shirt to an Australian Outback dance-off if you flew to Australia someday?
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to be a fan of theirs for a while before I could do that, because I'd have to say that would be my favorite doing that, because that's what you stated earlier. So I don't know if I could call them my favorite just off of one song.
Oh, okay. Well, you don't specifically have to just listen to that one song. You could go on, you could look up the YouTube video, Don Rinkles, CPO Sharky, and the Dickies, because the Dickies make it, you know, they do a song on CPO Sharky.
Okay. I will check them out, and if they're any good, maybe. We'll put it as a maybe.
All right, I'm going to mark that down. Okay, very good. All right, well, Chris, I'd like to read a passage from the wrestling memoir Body Slam by ring announcer Gary Michael Capetta, a man who spent 20 years in the business. And in this passage, he talks about Native Bahamians in Nassau, Bahamas, who didn't want to pay in an admission fee. Can I read that to you now?
Sure.
Okay, all right, just, okay. As I stood in the center of the ring, I tried to distance myself from the threat of this dangerous scheme without the aid of Pasta, performing on automatic pilot, into the swaying trees beyond the walls, drifting away in thought, escaping to a safer place. Remembering a humorous story I had heard years before about this stadium. It was a story about how an indie promoter sought revenge on the Bahamians who had figured out a way to enjoy the show without pain. These Islanders who were not bold enough or foolish enough to scale the stadium walls. Those who waited for the sun to set before shimmying up the tree trunks until they reached the highest branches where they settled into makeshift skyboxes to enjoy the show beside the island's exotic parrots. With every event these eavesdroppers enjoyed, the promoter became more resentful until he devised a plan designed to shake the freeloaders from the perches. On the afternoon of his next monthly show, he sent his workers up into the trees with hacksaws. Their mission was to cut grooves halfway through all the upper branches. The incisions were inconspicuous, slight enough to be invisible, but deep enough to crack under the pressure of the slightest weight. That night, when the sun went down and the show was underway, the promoter sat back and patiently waited until he heard rustling in the trees. The stunned shrieks of the natives as they plunged to the ground from high atop their perches provoked in him howls of joy. "It was a riot," he exclaimed. "I watched the whites of their eyes and those big toothy grins inch higher and higher into the trees. They thought they were going to get over on me again, but no damn way. It was funnier than hell to hear them screaming than hitting the ground. Boom, boom, boom. Damn, we laughed our asses off. My question is, if you ever became a promoter, would you do something as drastic as partly cutting through palm branches if you visited a foreign island?"
I don't know if I could, man. Those are people. You know, yeah, they're trying to see the show for free, but those are people. But, man, I think that story just shows you how relentless wrestling fans are when they want to see their show. They're willing to risk injury to themselves or even death to watch.
Yes, they would climb a coconut tree, yes. Now, you know, now in today's legitimate society, or Sue Happy society, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, legitimate, you know, everyone's quick to sue, you know. Of course, that isn't in the United States. It was in the Bahamas. Well, my question is, do you yourself someday have aspirations of becoming a promoter?
I've ran a few shows in the past, and it is, I don't think it's for me. You know, like, I could get in there and maybe help teach the younger guys, you know, what I know. You know, I can't say that I would train them to be stars or anything, but I could share my knowledge with younger guys. But I don't think I could run a company myself, you know, not full time.
All right. In the state of Indiana, does Hoosier Pro Wrestling have the best concession stand? And is Jerry Wilson a big fan of their nachos and cheese sauce? Jerry Wilson.
Seeing how I haven't been to that particular promotion for probably 13 years or so, I can't say.
Oh, okay. When was the last time you saw Cousin Cooter and his chicken?
That has been a while. Not nearly as long as 13 years ago, but I mean, want to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, 4 or 5, okay. How about Brandon Styles that sometimes goes by the name Brandy Styles?
Brandy Styles, that's phenomenal. Yeah, it has been a while, yeah.
How did you like Brandy Styles' flower print dress?
the Brandi Styles thing is cracking me up. That's amazing. I don't think that Brandi Styles can pull off the dress.
Oh, you don't? Okay. All right. Well, how would you recommend a kilt to Brandi Styles in the mode of Roddy Roddy Piper?
I would recommend pants for Brandi Styles at any given time.
Pants, okay. All right, well, Chris, it was good having you back on. I hope you do your homework assignment and listen to Manny, Moe, and Mitch, or whatever that song was, Manny, Moe, and yes, and look at CPO Sharky with the Dickies on there, and I will turn it now back over to Sign Guy. Yes.
Thank you, QT. Chris Caliber, when you were breaking in, it was with a few of the local guys as well, and one of those local guys can be seen on pretty much a weekly basis on WWE television. Jason Ayers made it from the training there in North Vernon, Indiana, all the way to the big stage. What's it like knowing that one of the people you broke in with made it all the way to the biggest stage in the industry and is full time with that company?
Hey, how crazy is that, right? You know, like our little group of, you know, punk kids that started out together and one of us, you know, kind of made it. You know, he's been on WrestleMania. He's done it all, man. But it couldn't have happened to a better person in our group. I mean, I'm not dogging anybody that started with us or done anything, you know, right at about the same time we did. But Jason's worked his tail off harder than anybody I've ever seen. You know, it wasn't a matter of if he was ever going to make it there. It was just a matter of when, because he just worked and worked and worked. And, you know, it was awesome to see it finally pay off for him.
Absolutely. And took him forever to get to the Pacific Northwest, but finally someone in that company actually booked him on one of the Pacific Northwest tours.
Awesome.
Now, I know that you yourself haven't been as active as in years past until the last year or so. Were you still following what was going on the local independent? Did you keep your eyes on certain people, kind of see where the latest trends were, see who is coming up, who is moving down in the industry?
Yes and no. I mean, it was hit and miss. I would pay attention for a little while and then kind of separate myself because it was like I was so busy, you know. My boy was playing football. My boy was, you know, all the milestones with my kid and everything that it was, you know, more let's worry about family. You know, wrestling's always going to be around. I mean, not necessarily for me to do it, but, you know, wrestling will never go away. It will always be there. So it's like if I missed a couple months of paying attention to what was going on to spend time with my kid, then, you know, it was well worth it.
Now, once you made the decision to go into Emerge and to New Era and wrestle more actively than you had, was there a lot of scouting you did, or did you just kind of go in there with the knowledge and the skills that you did have, or did you have to watch a lot of video, maybe find a place to do some training, get back into ring shape before that? What was the battle plan going back into a more full-time type environment?
The battle plan was I can always get a hold of NWA Supreme. And they always welcome me back. They run weekly down there. So it was, you know, go down there, get in the ring, work out for a while, you know, try to get back in ring shape. As far as scouting goes, I came into Emerge against Ricky Ruckus for the first few months. And Donnie Idol and JD Mariani, guys that I'm really familiar with that, you know, I know their moveset. I know what they're doing. So it gave me an opportunity for the first, you know, four or five shows to sit back and see these young cats that came in and, you know, kind of do some scouting then. So, you know, it helped out quite a bit to be in there with familiar faces for a little while.
And when you got the call about Emerge, were you thinking this was going to be a full-time comeback, that you would be on all of the Emerge shows? Or when you got the initial call, were you thinking kind of a one-off shot?
I thought maybe a few months, you know, do 3 or 4 shows, just kind of, you know, it was more to, like I said before, to let my kid see me wrestle live and, you know, let him see his mom wrestle live and that sort of thing, you know, because the shows that we did, he was really young, so he wasn't going to remember. And then, you know, it's impossible to say no to the Emerge guys now. I mean, like, the brand that they built and the product that they put out, you know, it's becoming one of the best in the Midwest very quickly. It's really hard to say no to going back every month, you know, and I will be there every month that those guys want to have me on the show. I mean, it's really a privilege to be booked up for them.
Now, you also, in the last several months, have debuted for New Era Wrestling up in Shelbyville. What was it like going to New Era for the first time, I believe?
New Era, it was in like an old locker room. It is like going back home, kind of. You know, most of the guys in that locker room I've, you know, wrestled on shows with throughout my career, and it's like everybody was all kind of clustered in one building together. So, I mean, it was a real easy transition to get into that locker room and on those shows. It was pretty seamless.
Was the crowd in Shelbyville any different from what your experiences were in other towns? Because I know every crowd's going to be different, but was it a different type of mindset to get into when you're wrestling in front of a crowd in Shelbyville as opposed to one in Columbus or Seymour or Madison, what have you?
Like you said, every crowd is different. I mean, the Shelbyville crowds can sometimes kind of be picky on what they want to see, you know, and if you're not giving them exactly what they're wanting to see, that, you know, that style for that night, they can kind of, you know, sit on their hands a little bit. But that's where, you know, you being a veteran in the business, you got to adapt to that and, you know, change gears and give them what they want. Cause you know, they paid for the ticket to be there, you know, they're paying money to see you. So, you know, you got to give them what they want and make sure they leave happy. But yeah, I've noticed month to month, you know, their taste changes. You know, they want some fast-paced stuff and some high-flying stuff. And, you know, this month and the next month, they want things slower and the more methodical and all that. So it's been kind of a challenge, you know, to myself to give them what they want and kind of feel out what the crowd's feeling for that night and deliver it to them.
Considering you were out for quite some time and only wrestling very sporadically, did you have any type of old injuries that you needed to rehab before you were able to make it back into the ring? Did you have to work on any particular body part to get it ready to take on a more rigorous schedule?
Not really. I mean, most of my injuries are from well long ago. You know, back in, I think, 2004, 2005 is when I did my knee injury and had surgery and all that. So everything is pretty much healed up. I mean, I felt better than I had in several years when I started to go back. But it was more of just getting the cardio back, which I'm still working on. You know, that stuff in the ring, you can't replicate that in the gym anywhere. So, you know, getting your cardio is basically getting in the ring and doing your thing there. So that was pretty much my only hurdle is, you know, not getting winded quickly against these younger guys, man, because they just want to go, and it's a challenge to keep up with them.
Now, speaking of injuries, I'm sure you've been on shows where there's been some injuries happen. What's been the most catastrophic injury you've ever witnessed or even heard tell of in a locker room?
The worst one that I've witnessed, I'll give you both answers. The worst one that I witnessed was my own knee injury, busting my kneecap apart into 6 pieces. It was pretty gruesome down in Kentucky. And I hear stories of people breaking their necks, man. Like here in the locker room where people go up for, you know, a back body drop and they just don't rotate over. Or, you know, a German suplex that was too high. Stuff like that. It's just like, I wish people would slow down a little bit and take care of themselves in there. Because, you know, obviously the goal is at the end of the night for everybody to go home uninjured. You know, we all want to get back home to our families. So it's like.
Now, what has been so far the farthest that you have traveled for wrestling?
See, I've kind of made the runs right around Indiana, you know, pretty regularly in the beginning of my career. I'm trying to think. I know, I want to say that me and Damian Devine back in the day were booked on a show out in Kansas, but it's been so long ago that I can't really remember who it was for or if we actually made the trip out there, because I know it was kind of towards the winter time, so we might have gotten canceled off of that one. But for sure, known the farthest that I've been is, you know, the southern part of Tennessee down there.
And did you notice a difference between the fans in Indiana and the fans of Tennessee?
Oh, yeah. It's like night and day difference between the two. You know, down there they want the more old school style, you know, the quote-unquote Memphis style, you know, which some of our guys in our locker room get a little crap for being too Memphis. So, you know, hopefully they'll listen to this and they'll catch that little joke in there, because I've been riding him about it since he brought it up. But, yeah, man, they want the old school stuff. They want the, you know, the selling and all that more so than the high-flying and, you know, nonstop action.
Speaking of that, do you, with a lot of today's product, that selling's becoming something of a lost art? Because especially on a lot of the televised big mainstream shows, you'll see guys kicking out of each other's finishers. You'll see guys take just brutal punishment and barely register it. Do you think selling something that's gotten away from the business?
I think so. I mean, that's something that, like, I pride myself on, because I watched some of the best sellers coming up, you know, and it's something that I'm doing. And I, people that I'm in the ring with, it's the same thing. It's like, if you punch me in the face one time and it does devastating damage that one time, you know what I mean? That shows that you're strong, and that shows that you're, you know, a competitor. But if you hit me 9 times in the face and I'm just move on to the next thing, it's like, how hard are you really hitting? You know what I mean? It's like one of those things where in today's wrestling world, a lot of guys are worried about looking quote unquote weak, you know, and people know selling them and this and that. And it's like, but you just did 15 forearms to a guy and he's still standing there looking at you. So, you know, it's like, why not do 2, you know, type thing. But yeah, I think selling is kind of a lost art. I think it's WWE's quote unquote fault, I should say. It's one of those things where they're on TV, they got a limited amount of time. They got to, you know, hit their time marks. So it's like, okay, we got to get this done. We got to get this done and get this done, instead of scaling it back a little bit and telling a great story to get to the, you know, of where you want to end the match. Which a buddy of mine and I were talking about it the other day, about how finishers drive me nuts. Like, you know, now that the match isn't going to end until you see The Rock hit the Rock Bottom, or, you know, Taker hit the Tombstone, or Cena hit the Attitude Adjustment. And it's like, you know, the match won't end until then, you know. And back in our day, when we were watching wrestling as a kid, I know you're right there with me, a schoolboy would end things, or things would end off a clothesline, you know, it would end out of nowhere. So you never knew who really was going to win in these things. And I think that's something that's missing a little bit.
One of the aspects in wrestling that often gets overlooked is the importance of actual good referees. I know some promoters don't really invest in the referees too much. They'll just use whoever, not realizing it can actually hurt the product. Some promoters very good about using top quality ones. since you've come back, who are some of the better referees that you've been in the ring with?
Pretty much the referees at Emerge and the referees at New Era, pretty much the same. So those two guys, two groups, their referee roster is great, you know. And down in NWA Supreme, since I've been down there a couple times, they got a kid named Alex down there that he's still learning the referee trade. But, I mean, yeah, it makes a big difference in matches to where, you know, if you have a guy that's a referee, there's an art to being heavily involved in the match without taking away from the match. And a lot of the guys think that it's just, you know, let me count to three, let me count to 10, you know, that's all I really need, or let me count to five in the corners. But, you know, there's so much more to it than that for referees. And I think you're right. Like, a lot of promoters just, whatever, who has a referee shirt, get them out there. But yeah, I urge promotions, invest in your referees. It will make your show 10 times better. You can have all the talent in the world out there, but if the referee is not a good one, they're going to be lost. Trust me.
Watching a match and you see a referees do things that aren't correct, do you ever hear Jason Ayer's voice in your head screaming at the guy?
I don't know if screaming would be the appropriate term, because he's one of the most laid-back dudes I know. But, yeah, I can hear him. Oh, he's doing that wrong. Oh, why did he do that? Oh, he shouldn't be there. You know, I can hear the voice, maybe not screaming, but, you know, just correcting the mistakes. Yeah, I can hear him definitely.
Now, have you seen any lady referees out there? I know that there's a few out there right now, and it's something that promotions are kind of looking at, bringing in some of the lady referees and making them actual trained referees. Have you come across any?
I haven't really here in the Midwest, no. I mean, I'm sure there's been a few sporadically, but, you know, nothing on a regular basis.
At the shows you've been on since you've been coming back, have you noticed any type of difference as far as what you need to do to entertain the fans as opposed to, say, 8-10 years ago?
No, not really, man. Wrestling's wrestling. You know, it's all about giving the fans that ride that they want. You know, it's, you tell them a story and you get them emotionally invested, and it makes your job a million times easier.
We talked about overcoming injuries a little bit earlier. Have you had to also kind of adjust your diet and training regimen from what you had been when you were far less active?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've started cutting out quite a few unhealthy things for myself here lately, because I've noticed that, you know, I've gained some weight since my injury, you know, more so from just the sheer laziness. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it and make excuses, you know, of, oh, well, I was injured, I couldn't do this. Nah, I was lazy when I got injured. It was one of those things, one of those I felt sorry for myself type things. So, you know, I gained a bunch of weight, and now I'm working to get all that weight off, you know, after being in a sedentary lifestyle for a while. So, you know, the diet is coming along, you know, cutting out sodas and a lot of sugar. And now the training is more heavily cardio-based, more so than the weights, so that, you know, I can get my knee stronger and cut weight off of me so that my knee feels that much better.
One of the fads that is getting kind of mixed reviews in wrestling is incorporating CrossFit. Is that something you've ever delved into or explored? And do you have any type of opinion on CrossFit as to how it incorporates into wrestling?
I've looked into it. It's not something that I've personally done, but I can kind of see the relationship between wrestling and CrossFit. It's a lot of the same moves, you know, a lot of the same body movements, I should say. So, yeah, I could see how they could help each other out quite a bit.
Being in the locker rooms, is there any other type of, like, fad type of training regimen out there that the boys seem to be enjoying right now?
Not really. I mean, a few of the guys I know, you know, do the CrossFit thing. But, you know, mostly it's just in the gym, throwing around heavy weights, doing their thing, you know what I mean? It's kind of the same thing as wrestling. You go into a gym, it doesn't change. You're going there to lift stuff. You know, just like in a wrestling ring, you're going out there to tell a story. So, you know, it's, the old stuff still works. So.
Well, we got just a few minutes left, so I want to give that time to you. If there's anything you want to say to the listeners today, plug and promote anything you got, social medias, upcoming shows, merchandise, favorite tire store, anything at all, floor is all yours.
All right. The only thing I want to say is, you know, everybody come out May 7th to Emerge Wrestling in Columbus, Indiana. We will be at the DSI Gym. The bell time's 7 o'clock, but we have a pre-show match featuring our tag team champions starting at 6:30. Be there early. It's going to sell out. We always sell out that building. You know, we always have a huge packed crowd. So, you know, get your tickets now. Contact me via Facebook. You know, just search for Chris Caliber on there. You'll find me. Chris Caliber on Instagram, Chris Caliber on Twitter there. So, you know, just find me all over the place. I'm going to be doing Facebook Live posts from the next Emerge show with some people in the locker room. So it should be a blast. Come check me out. If you see me advertised somewhere, come check me out. You know, you'll like what you see. I guarantee you'll go home happy. I always have T-shirts for sale. I'm going to start selling hoodies again once the weather starts cooling down. You know, Karma will have her T-shirts for sale. She'll be with me at all the shows. You know, she's wrestling Kelly Klein for the Emerge Women's Championship on May 7th. So make sure you guys come out and see us.
All right. Well, Chris Caliber, always my pleasure to talk to you. Hopefully our paths will cross again in the near future.
Hey, we definitely do need to see each other at some point in time soon. It's been way too long.
It has been. I blame a bunch of rogue firemen for it not happening the last time we were supposed to.
I firmly back your story on that.
All right. Well, Chris Caliber, best of luck to you on the 7th of May. Be safe in there. Fans will be back with you Sunday afternoon. The return of any Wraith to the program. We'll talk to you then.